The Brad Sesmat Show, broadcasting live.
John Wilner is with us. It is the start of the grind, I guess, is the best way to put it. We will see one another in Las Vegas this Friday at Pac-12 Football Media Day. You look refreshed, relaxed after a break. That is great. Let's just look ahead to Friday right off the top. What is Wilner Hotline looking at closely? What do you expect to hear? Let's just start with the day with the commissioner's address to the media on Friday morning, and we'll go through some coaches. What do you expect?
Yeah, I mean, that's the big thing, right? And this is the second consecutive Pac-12 media day in which the future of the conference is at stake, uncertain, right? I mean, we went through this whole thing last July after USC and UCLA announced they were leaving and nobody knew what the future was going to be. And here we are, and there's still no resolution. So clearly, at this point, the question is, what, if anything, is Commissioner George Kliakoff going to say about Pac-12 media rights, about expansion, about the stability of the conference? My sense is that we will – he's going to get asked about it on Friday. But I think there's a chance we may know a little bit of something before Friday. They don't want that to dominate the news. I don't know if they're going to issue some kind of an announcement or get word out via leaks to the media. I don't have any idea, but I can't imagine it's going to be radio silence until he steps to the podium at 8 a.m. on Friday, and then he's just going to get hammered with questions. Why don't you have a media deal? Is Colorado leaving? Are the Arizona schools leaving? They got to get something done. So to me, that's the biggest thing. And then it's all about football and the most anticipated football season the conference has had in at least a decade.
Okay, so let's put you and I in their room. Let's put you and I in their situation. Do we see the walls crumbling down around us? Are they that tone deaf? Because you and I can sit here and say, boy, in 365 days, whew, there's a lot of bad news. But could they look at it, John, and say, nobody's leaving. We have some schools that are interested in us. Well, we're sitting here kind of on the side, and ESPN's had layoffs, and now they're talking about maybe selling, and maybe if we're in that room on that side of the table, we look around and say, yeah, we're going to get hammered, but patience is going to persevere. Do you buy that?
Well, I think I do buy it at the very, you know, the most inner circle of the conference power structure, right? I mean, the commissioner and the presidents and chancellors have been talking regularly. So the noise doesn't necessarily have an impact, a material impact on the direction of this thing, right? ESPN or Apple or whoever's going to bid or has bid on the Pac-12 media rights, they don't actually care about Football Media Day. That has not, right. That has no bearing whatsoever on the valuation of a 6-8 year deal, right? It's more just the noise and the optics and whether that takes away from the focus on football, which none of the schools want. Everybody's looking forward to this season. They want the focus Friday to be on the new coaches, on the quarterbacks, the playoff contenders, the Heisman candidates. But it's not going to be if they don't get some kind of clarity or provide some kind of clarity. So, yes, there are two different perspectives on it. But we're dealing from the outside, and what the media narrative is going to be this week if they have nothing for us on how the negotiations are going.
I guess, John, I'm just trying to figure out their side of the street because you and I can sit here and it looks like they're a bunch of nincompoops at times.
Right.
And there's stronger words that we could use.
They have. Yes. I mean, certainly from a messaging standpoint, you can take issue with how the last 54 weeks have gone, you know,
sure.
But they know, you know, they have insight into how the negotiations are going that we don't. And they have taken a radio silence position. It's been costly in some regards from an optic standpoint, but they have their reasons. And, you know, the bottom line is that the negotiating partners don't want leaks. The presidents don't want leaks, so the commissioner's radio silence is serving his two most important stakeholders.
Are you surprised that he's not feeling more heat? Or, Brad, he's feeling a ton of heat. We just don't see it and hear it.
Well, I don't know. To be honest, I don't know. It depends what he's hearing from his presidents. Now, the thing is, though, the presidents can be lying, right? That's the thing about realignment.
The
entire basis of realignment is that nobody tells the truth. So Colorado or Arizona, Arizona State, Utah, they could be saying, we're not going to the Big 12. We're staying with the Pac-12. We like how you're handling the situation. Meanwhile, they're negotiating a contract with the Big 12, right? But that's the thing. He's going from his perspective and what the presidents are telling him, but who knows if they're telling him the truth.
John Wilner with us for a couple of minutes. Of course, follow him, Wilner Hotline, on social media. His content shows up on sports360az.com as well as several other outlets. He's built this great network together with his content. Pac-12 Media Day, we'll see John this Friday in Las Vegas. Okay, on the field, what are you looking? The storyline, you're like, I just can't wait to sink my teeth into this on-the-field story. Which one moves you the most?
There's so many, right? Because they're going to have five or six teams in the AP preseason poll, and there's three or four that have legitimate designs on a playoff bid. You know, there's a ton of stories. Certainly, in terms of what is going to unfold Friday, Deion Sanders will be the biggest story, right? I mean, they could put, you know, they've got the space booked at the, what is it, Resorts World in Las Vegas. They could put Deion at a table with a microphone at T-Mobile Arena and have 15,000 people come listen to whatever Deion wants to say, right? So obviously he's going to be a huge story. USC, UCLA, their last season in the conference, those are going to be big stories. What do Lincoln Riley and Chip Kelly have to say about that? The quarterbacks are going to be a huge story, right? There's a ton of great quarterbacks. You know, from a injury standpoint, the biggest one hanging over the conference is Cam Rising, the Utah quarterback, and is he going to be ready for the opener against Florida? But I mean, between the teams and the quarterbacks and the new coaches, I mean, it's just there's too many stories, right?
Yeah, and I think here in state, here in Arizona, to localize it a little bit, there's shock that U of A is bringing Jaden Delora to Pac-12 Media Day because of allegations against him back in his high school days that have surfaced. And if they think that he's not going to have to address that, they just don't know what they're doing. So I think there's that surprise that he is coming. I think for Kenny Dillingham being on the same stage as the youngest coach in Division I within this conference and to be sitting alongside of Chip Kelly and Lincoln Riley and Deion Sanders and go down the list, that's pretty daunting. What do you make out of the two schools down here and what they'll face on Friday?
Well, I mean, Dillingham is, you know, he is definitely going to be a secondary news story for, except for the Arizona State media, right? I mean, there's just too many. The national media, regional media, they've got other targets on Friday. So he'll be able to kind of float under the radar, which I'm sure he's not going to complain about, right? Now, he could get asked about the NCAA situation and the penalties. And to, you know, a little bit of a side note, I think ASU got a big I take it as a big break for ASU or a good indicator. Tennessee had its penalties announced the other day, right? One of the worst cases of infractions the NCAA has ever seen, and Tennessee did not get a postseason ban. I think that bodes very well for ASU, right? They could get hit with scholarship reductions and all that kind of thing. But to me, ASU is going to probably dodge a bowl ban given how the NCAA treated Tennessee. As for Arizona, you know, I think they're just saying, you know what, we're going to send Delora into the storm. Why not? It's in some ways, I think it's a very smart strategic move. Let's just get this out of the way. You know, he needs to be able to do this. Holding himself accountable is part of the maturation of a quarterback. This is a great case of that. He's going to get on a podium, have to face questions about things that are not comfortable for him. And I think that that's, in a way, that's very smart of them. Just let's just, we're not going to hide. Let's just face it head on. And then that will put him, I think that will kind of help him be able to focus on the season. He gets through this and he's a different, I think his whole makeup, the public face of Jaden Delora will change if he gets through this thing in a mature way with the media, holding himself accountable, answering the questions honestly, and just moves forward.
No, I would agree with you on that. I want to just see how he handles being in a big press conference with a bunch of people and then individually. And if it's, we're not going to talk about this, then okay.
Yeah, they can't do that. I mean, they can't expect that he's going to get there and just stick his head in the sand on those issues, right? They have to be thinking, you know what? He's going to address it. He's going to have a plan on how to address it. You know, they're going to work with him on the questions and answers. But I think it's smart strategy. It's a little bit unusual, but I think it's smart.
Back on the Arizona State thing, John. Tennessee didn't get a bowl ban. My understanding is ASU about 20 months ago self-imposed scholarship reductions. Yeah. They just didn't put it out there.
Right.
And so $9 million, though, that's a hefty chunk of change, which wipes out, if you were to go to a bowl game, basically you're still going to be paying through the nose. So is it the amount of the fine, I guess I'm looking at, that, yeah, they did, Tennessee dodged a bullet on not going to a bowl game, but they were fined $9 million. I know that sounds like chump change to the fan base. I don't think Arizona State could absorb a $9, $10 million hit without there being some ramifications within the athletic department.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. You know, how would President Michael Crow handle that? Would he help out the athletic department? I mean, the ASU is one of the highest subsidized athletic departments in the conference in terms of getting assistance from Central Campus. Yep. So that would be one option. I don't know if they can't cut other things. I wouldn't think they'd have to cut other things because of mistakes a football program made. And we don't know that ASU would get a similar penalty as Tennessee, right? But I do think that avoiding the bowl ban is a big thing for recruiting. It's a big thing for fans and interest in the season. It's a big thing for keeping your roster intact and not having players flee through the transfer portal. I mean, all those things in terms of the trajectory of your young program under your new coach, I think would be well served by avoiding a bowl ban. And if you get fined, you get fined. You got to eat that money somehow. Mm-hmm. But longer run, they're better off without a bowl ban.
Let's go off that. I'll see you on Friday in Las Vegas. Thanks for the visit.
Thanks very much, Brad.
There's John Wilner. Wilner Hotline, always must read, must listen, must watch. He's on several platforms. Make sure you follow John and you'll learn more. And we're back with more after this timeout. All right, I've been talking about this for the last week or so. It is the middle of summer with schools getting started later this week in the Chandler School District, and that means that it's time to look at your kid top to bottom. And I've talked about mental health a lot here on all of our platforms. We have Dr. Mark Strickland with us. He works in professional sports. I'm going to leave it at that. I'm not going to be specific about which teams or that stuff. It's just fair to say he's in professional sports as a sports psychologist. And he and Ortho Arizona, our partners, are putting together an Ortho Arizona Sports Medicine event this coming Tuesday at South Gilbert and Wednesday at their Pima Center locations. It's a free event, mental health and the athlete. And I wanted to do a deep dive with Dr. Strickland. We spoke this past week about, let's jump on board here. And I'm not going to ask about specific players. Just all of you are like, well, ask about this guy. No, you can't do that. So with that said, let's just get into this topic. And how did this event come together, Mark? And what do you hope to accomplish on these two nights?
Well, hopefully I hope to accomplish some education for parents, for athletes, for anyone who really shows up. But two, I want people to understand how important mental health and wellness is. I think a lot of times when we talk about mental health, people think about mental illness. And mental illness is a part of that. But also want people to understand like how to engage in good mental health behaviors, how to engage in helping your child, maybe who's an athlete, or your spouse who's an athlete, engage in those behaviors. Because a lot of athletes spend a lot of time working on their physical performance, right? They go to the gym, they work out, they go to practice, they eat right, they have nutrition, sleep, all this stuff. And then we avoid kind of that last piece, which is that mental health and wellness that we all need to pay attention to, whether we're athletes or not.
When you are talking to an audience that is high school and college specific, what is the message that you want to get across?
I think the message is mental health and wellness is a daily practice. It's not just something we go do when we've had a bad game or we've had a bad night's sleep. I think it's something we have to engage in regularly. Just like we go and practice every day, or we go to the gym and work out every day. We don't need to wait for something to go wrong before we engage in mental health practices. I think a lot of times we are reactive to our mental health instead of proactive. Just like we don't wait to get hurt to go start lifting, let's not wait for a mental health issue or mental illness to occur when we can be proactive in managing our own mental health.
Okay, let's go into some things. What role does this play in mental health? Everybody's
Wow, you hit the big topic first. I mean, cell phones are great. We all have them. You know, it's a way to stay connected with the world, with our information on our home computers. If you're a business person, emails, all that stuff. But it's also a double-edged sword, right? Because it's a way for you to disconnect from yourself through social media, through, you know, other platforms, other apps. And really what it helps is it takes you away from yourself, right? Social media is not a bad thing, but when we feel ourselves getting sucked in and all of a sudden we look up and we spend an hour scrolling, right? And we haven't really taken the time to take care of ourselves, or we start to feel bad about ourselves because what we're seeing on social media, which is not always reality, it's that person's interpretation of reality, then that's where that double-edged sword, you know, can really get us in trouble. And the research is pretty clear. People who spend more time on social media struggle with depression at higher rates. So again, it's not all good or bad, but it's really an avenue where we can get sucked into something that takes us away from who we are, what we value.
Okay. A player has a tough game in whatever sport and they get home and they see somebody posting a highlight of, or low light, I guess in this case, of what they did out on the field. A parent sees that, a family member sees that, and they all spiral together. Sure. How do you address that when you're sitting in a session with an athlete of, on social media, I got picked on?
In a perfect world, I encourage all my athletes to discontinue their social media accounts during their season, just for that reason. And most of them don't wait till they get home. Most of them get that information, you know, in the locker room after the game. It's being live fed through the game. You know, you have a bad play and people are tweeting about it, or people who are on fantasy football or fantasy sports, you know, they're, you cost me this much money, or you, why didn't you do this? Or I bet on you this weekend, or this or that. So that information is like constantly being bombarded to the athlete. And I will say family's guilty of that too. You know, your kid's playing in Virginia, they're in college, and I've had parents, you know, texting their kid through the game. Why are you doing this? You're the worst player in the world. So sometimes family can be the worst nightmare too. And really, in a perfect world, I would say discontinue your social media use through the season. If you can't do that, right, then I say discontinue your social media use until you've processed your own emotion of the game. If you've had a bad game, or it's been a bad outcome, or you had a poor performance, maybe even though your team won, right, don't get on that emotional roller coaster that social media is going to create for you. Process your own feelings about the game. Go to sleep, get up the next morning. And if you're feeling like, okay, I've worked through that, then you can get on social media. But I would say delay that process because it just creates that roller coaster effect of your emotions even higher than what you're normally experiencing.
Dr. Mark Strickland with us for a couple of minutes. Ortho Arizona Sports Medicine Conference are putting together. Sports psychologist here, works with professional athletes all the way through the college and high school end of things. It's a free event. It is Tuesday at Ortho Arizona South Gilbert, Wednesday Ortho Arizona Pima Center, mental health and the athlete. It's terrific that Ortho Arizona is putting this together. Mark is going to be the keynote speaker. Questions that you usually get. I'm just curious, what questions do you usually get in an event like this? Or maybe it's one-on-one from an athlete or a parent or even a coach.
You get the normal questions about dealing with injuries, right? That's a big issue in sport. It's not a matter of when you get hurt, you know, if you get hurt, it's when you get hurt, right? We all, whether it's minor or major. So I think a lot of these questions come, and particularly from like Ortho Arizona type patients, is how do I deal with injury? How do I recover from this? How do I maintain my confidence, even though I'm not participating in my sport right now? We get a lot from parents on how do I help my child, you know, with the emotional part of the game, help them grow as individuals, help them become, you know, well-rounded athletes and people. I would say from younger athletes, it's how do I get to be more mentally tough or resilient? You know, how do I learn those skills? And then, you know, as an athlete becomes more and more successful or plays longer and gets more experience, then it's about how do I maintain that? You know, how do I maintain my skills? How do I maintain my mental awareness, my self-awareness when I'm dealing with, you know, the professional side of sport, you know, contracts and, you know, those challenges that come with being a professional athlete or, you know, or making your money from that profession. So I would say across the continuum, we look a lot at how do I manage my own thoughts and emotions and feelings? How do I deal with injury? And how can I learn skills that will help me grow and develop this part of my game throughout my lifespan?
When you talk to an athlete, Dr. Strickland, and they are one that we see this, I think it's becoming more common. They jump from school to school, high school, college. Can't do that in the NFL as much or pro sports in general. But when they jump from school to school and it's, I'm being disrespected, my coach doesn't like me. Is that a mental health issue?
It could be. It certainly could be. It maybe not always, because again, it's a, you know, the thing about sports and coaching and relationships is it's a relationship business, right? And so being able to develop and foster that relationship with your coach, with your support staff, with the trainers and medical personnel, like that's a very important skill that I think we're losing in our society. You know, relationships have now become more of a online through the pandemic, dealing with Zoom and, you know, using FaceTimes and things like that. And so I think the challenge is, we have a separation of the ages. We have the coaches who are maybe in one generation, and we have players and athletes who are in another generation, and how they communicate is much differently now. And so I think part of that is we need to work on building better relationships in our society, right? One-on-one, individual, understand the person, understand the role, understand yourself so that you can communicate what your needs are. You know, sometimes coaches think they know what the athlete needs. The athlete thinks I want this. And so you see that jumping around because the athlete's looking for something to be fulfilled in a relationship standpoint. And that's a good thing because it does give them some freedom, but it's also a negative thing because it doesn't make you sit with your frustration of working with a challenging coach or being in a challenging experience. You can just escape it and go to a different environment. You don't have to work through those tough things. And that's where I think we're losing that ability to work through some of those frustrations early in life. And we see that challenge, you know, as athletes get older.
We talked about the phone. We talked about players. We talked about parents a little bit. I haven't talked about coaches. When you talk about mental health, I actually did a segment a couple of weeks ago with a referee just on how they deal with their mental health because, you know, officials are never popular.
Sure.
But I want to talk about coaches and talking about mental health because we have coaches that watch our content, take our content in. What are some of the concerns you have if you're visiting with a coach?
The big challenges for coaching is it's a really difficult job, right? And there's no degree for coaching, so to speak, you know? And so I think part of it is coaches work incredibly long hours, right? No matter what level they coach at. Two, they're always being second guessed, whether it's by the parents, whether it's by the fans, whether it's by the media. And three, their support systems, their family, sometimes they're away from them. You know, a lot of the coaches in the professional ranks don't live where they're from or where their homes are, you know, so you're isolated. And then, you know, the challenge is you could be fired at any time. And so I think from a coaching standpoint, coaches need to mimic and monitor good mental health behavior, right? Good sleep hygiene, good nutrition, you know, minimizing use of cell phones and alcohol and other things that are, you know, addictive properties. And so when we mimic those things for our athletes are more likely to engage in those behaviors. And then two, coaches need to have an honest discussion about their own mental health and wellness and, right, and the challenges, right? The NCAA recently put out a study, like 60% of coaches are experiencing burnout, right? So if you're not at your best self as a coach, do you really expect your team to perform at its best level? And sometimes that's, hey, I need to step away or I need to take a break and make sure I'm engaging in my own mental health and wellness so that my athletes are getting my best self too.
like on the high school level, I think you and I spoke the other day about this when we talked about doing this interview. One of the states, maybe Indiana, I could be wrong, you could correct me on it, but even high school coaches need to go through a certain amount of hours of mental health training, right?
Right. Yeah, Ohio actually is the first state here just recently in the last few weeks to require continuing education for coaches. Because again, most coaches, most people get in the coaching profession because they love the sport. They like to work with kids or work with adults, you know, whatever. But there's no training. You don't go to college to be a coach like you do a doctor or a lawyer or a dentist. And so you get in because you love it. You maybe had a good coach who was a role model in your life and you want to kind of give that back. But, you know, good, sound coaching principles, you know, pedagogical principles, biomechanics, things like that. Like, we need to understand those things. We need to, coaches need to understand what mental health issues are so they can identify them and, you know, help get a professional to that person, just like they need to know a little bit about injuries so that they can help the trainers and everyone else, you know, participate in that person's care. And so coaching education is important, you know, whether it's going to seminars and lectures, reading books, you know, going to see a therapist to kind of work on your own self and your relationships and family and things like that. But I think it's important that we coaches grow, not only the content of the sport, the rules of the sport and the training mechanisms, but they need to grow beyond sport because now athletes are coming to them or seeking them out and needing more than just the X's and O's. And the responsibilities of coaches has expanded beyond just X's and O's now. And that's a burden I think some coaches really carry because they don't know what to do with it, but they feel like they need to have the answer. And I tell coaches, you don't need to have the answer. You need to be able to identify, right? Recognize that there's something wrong and then get them to the right person, right? Whether it's a trainer, a doctor, psychologist, nutritionist, whatever it is, because you're the first point of contact for most athletes, you know? Don't feel like you have to fix it all, you know?
It's interesting because you have coaches, I'll go to the high school level. Just finished being a dad of 20 years of high school sports with four kids. So I saw it from all different angles. Many of them are older coaches and it's a different era and mental health was still viewed in some places as it's not a topic to put some dirt on and get out there and play, but more and more are addressing it. And not just talking about it as window dressing. I think even in athletic departments, district athletic directors are doing a better job now in addressing mental health. Do you see it the same way? And when did that pivot start to happen?
I would say that pivot really started just prior to COVID when some athletes, some high profile athletes really came out and talked about their mental health. Mm-hmm. Naomi Osaka, Simone Biles, Kevin Love, I mean, and a few others were like on the forefront of like, hey, I'm struggling. Like I have some serious things going on. And then COVID with the isolation and all the trauma that we all dealt with going through that experience really heightened our awareness to the importance of mental health, right? Suicide rates are on the rise for teens, right? Most individuals experience their first mental health crisis between the ages of 18 and 25, right? So when you're coaching those high school, college sports, like that's the first time in life where there might be a presentation where someone is struggling with some sort of mental health condition, right? And so as coaches, again, yes, there's an older generation. They come from a different framework, you know, things like that. But the good coaches, they have that relationship. They have that ability to connect to the athlete, whether there's a large generation gap or there's a small generation gap. And I think that's why most people get in the coaching professions because they actually care about the people they're working with. Right. But they don't have the knowledge, right? They don't have the expertise in everything else. And so, again, trying to educate coaches on what to look for, what are the red flags to look for, whether it's in mental health, injury, you know, nutrition, et cetera, and then helping them identify, hey, let's get you over and get some help in this domain. Let's call in, you know, Dr. Strickland and have him come in and talk to you a little bit, right? I'll join in with you if you need to. I'll participate if you need my help, you know? And so I think most of your athletes and the younger generation, the millennials, the Gen Zs, you know, I think they're open to mental health, right? They talk about it regularly. There's a lot of openness to it. And so I think the lag is the coaches are saying, oh, you're seeing someone? Like, what's wrong with you? Like, we need to change that. You're seeing someone? Good for you. You know, that's good behavior. Just like, oh, you went to the gym today and worked out. Great. You got stronger. Let's get you mentally stronger too. Let's see it as a benefit to your development in your career, as opposed to something, what's wrong with you.
Ortho Arizona putting this together. Dr. Mark Strickland, sports psychologist, works in professional sports, college sports, high school sports. The event is tomorrow night at Ortho Arizona in South Gilbert, Wednesday night, Ortho Arizona Pima Center, mental health and the athlete. And it's great stuff. It's a free event. Dr. Strickland, appreciate your time. Thanks.
Absolutely. Thank you.
And we're back with more after this timeout.